And asking yourself, well, how do I want to be, is so different from, oh Lord, what could go wrong?
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to another Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And it's always my pleasure to be with you here again. It's Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And, you know, start of my weekend. I hope it's the start of yours. Oh, my goodness. I look forward to weekends. I don't know why. I think I save up all the fun things for the weekend. I know that sounds crazy, because we should have fun every day, right? And so tonight we're going to have fun. I'm really excited about it. Oh, what am I drinking? I'm drinking this wonderful peppermint tea from Germany. And it really has no tea in it. It's just peppermint. I guess we can call that tea. I'm not sure. But it's really good. So I'm enjoying that. What are you curled up with tonight? Oh my goodness, maybe you can hear my voice. I am so excited. Sometimes I get a little carried away here because I get guests that I just can't wait to talk to, because I just love to talk to them, whether they're on my show or in person over Skype or something. And tonight we have Bev Martin. She's back with us. I've been trying for months to get this girl. She is so busy. She is just in so in demand. I've been trying to get her back on the show because I'm so thrilled to have her. I just consider her one of my resident coaches, I guess. Consultants, I think, is a better word for her. She's just a woman of huge talent, many, many talents, and I just love to talk to her because she just always has the best insights into things. And Bev's deepest joy is to give people who are hungry for greater meaning and spiritual solutions access to answers within themselves and the feeling of deep satisfaction that comes with connecting through their thoughts, wisdom, and true ideas. And I so welcome her back to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio, because we're going to tonight discover all the sorts of things about ourselves. We're going to talk about how we talk to ourselves. I found that lately I had a little flare and I started doing sort of negative talk because I realized what I'd done. I'd had a little too much stress. You know, I ate a couple things I shouldn't have eaten. And I was like, well, Sharon, that's not the way to talk to yourself. So Bev's going to come on, and we're going to talk about the ways to talk to ourselves, what it means, how to ask for help, all sorts of good things. We're just going to follow where this conversation goes, because this woman is just full of great ideas and deep wisdom. Welcome, Bev. So happy to have you back.
Thank you so much, Sharon. If you're excited, I'm more excited, because I love to engage with you. And I think it's you that when you and I talk, somehow the wisdom comes out. So I think it's you that makes it happen. So thank you for that.
Oh, well, I just ask questions and I don't know. They just pop out of your beautiful wise mouth there. They're just always amazing.
There is something about questions. You know, I do love a good question. And I do believe that when we ask ourselves the right question or a different question, we get different results. So we're on the same page.
And it's always interesting to me when people say, ask ourselves a question. What are you talking about? So let's describe sometimes. Maybe some people don't ever ask themselves a question. I don't know. I ask myself questions all the time. So I have to be
Absolutely.
Careful to not make that assumption that people ask themselves questions. What are some things that can happen if we do ask questions? Let me just come up with a couple of questions that I always ask myself that are very general, but I find them sometimes really inspiring when I sit still and wait for and listen and for the answer. And one of them is like, what do I need to know? Or lately, this one, when I had the little flare, I know this sounds a little weird, but I asked, what am I resisting? If And, you know, it's okay to say, if anything, but what am I resisting? And for me, that was like taking a little time off, you know, backing off a bit, resting a little bit more. And I was like, why am I resisting that? So it was interesting how those questions begin to develop. But let's first talk about the power of the question and even general questions like that. Like, what do I need to know, or what am I missing?
Well, you know, I believe that even if we don't own up to talking to ourselves on the inside and asking ourselves questions, we're often propelled by a question. A question is like a quest. It can move us. And as long as it's moving us to where we want to go, that's great. But a question can take us in the wrong direction. And one of my favorite new questions, and I have many because I love questions, is many people, similar to, I think your audience, people who've had anything chronic go on will know that they may be the types of people who do too much for others or who are very deeply empathic. And sometimes when we're empathic and we can feel what other people need, we make the mistake of thinking, oh, because I know what you need, then therefore it's my job to provide it.
Oh, good point. Ouch.
Exactly. We kind of think, oh, well, because I know that what you need, then that surely must mean that that's my job. And so one of my favorite questions to give people who, you know, people who love too much or help too much is this mine to do?
Oh, great question.
Isn't that good? Is this mine to do? It's like, I can see this is happening. I can see there's a need. Is this mine to do?
I love that because so many directions came up for me, but the first one that came up for me besides, well, guilty, was the thing that came up to me was, if I chose to do it, would I be taking away their learning opportunity, their learning experience? Am I trying to save them or something else from something that really is about them gaining greater experience?
Exactly. It can do several things. One is it can fools rush in where angels fear to tread. So it can stop us from doing that sort of knee-jerk, oh, you know, let me rescue, let me help, let me be, you know, if it's to be, it's up to me. Here I am. I have my Superman suit on. And the other piece, as you ask, like, is this mine to do? Like, well, there are only so many hours in a day. And if we ever get to the end of a day and go, whoa, where did the day go? I'm raising my hand because that happens a lot. Where did the day go? We can be in danger of doing for others at the expense of ourselves. So then it becomes like, well, I rushed in and helped this person and I'm a super, super angel of mercy over here. But our own inner self says, you've got your own stuff. You're not attending to your life while you're so busy, you know, being such a busybody. So is this mine to do? It's like, is this mine to do? Is this mine to do? Is this mine to do at all, you know? maybe it's to sit on my hands and or just, you say, give that person the opportunity to have their hands on their own steering wheel.
Well, you know, another thought came to mind because I love that and I can think of myself and many other people in my world that do rush in and actually physically do save someone, whatever. But I'm thinking how many times people who are more sensitive or empathic, like you said, or deeply caring people, see, aren't actually physically doing it. Like they don't go weed the garden, shall I say, you know, something very physical. But they're holding all of that pain maybe or whatever, angst or whatever they see their partner, friend, whatever going, family member going through. There's some sort of like carrying it along with them.
Yeah.
Which I've seen can take a lot of toll on someone too.
Well, it really does. And it's so true because it's almost like if we've seen it, we can't unsee it. And then it can be a mistake about like whose responsibility it is. It can feel, we might make the assumption that, you know, if I didn't hold that or carry it in some way that I was unfeeling, where the opposite is true. The person is overfeeling. They're over-responding. They're over-responsible. So at times to let that go. What my little phrase comes to mind, a little prayer for that. This is not a question, but it might be helpful, is a little prayer of, help me to observe, but not absorb.
Oh, help me to observe, but not absorb. I love
it. So, you know, it's like, let me see with my eyes, but not take it all in my belly, because it's not mine to carry, you know. And if it were truly helpful, even as a parent, I think, if it were truly helpful to take it on or hold it for another, well, then we could or we would. But is it? Is it really helpful if one person is having a hard time for the other person to say, well, I will have a hard time too? Or might it be more resourceful for us to like stay in our own business and stay empowered and be a resource to that person without being a risk?
True. What comes to my mind about being a rescuer is a dear friend of mine, Don, always says something about to the effect about just because your friend's dug a hole doesn't mean you have to jump in there with him.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's that over-empathizing. It's like, well, you feel lousy, so I'm going to feel lousy too. And then we both are in this position. So we're not lonely, but we're not very resourceful.
Right. You mentioned this interesting thing about taking it on and feeling it in the gut. And one thing that just hit me very hard when you said that was this intuition about a lot of autoimmune centers around the gut and the digestive system and the whole taking in an elimination track. And I don't know, just things like that happen.
Wow.
Folks wander through my mind.
Right. Well, yeah, I think you must be onto something, because I must admit that a generalization I've made with people I see in my office, I have a small population of people who have been dealing with chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia. And the generalization I make is that they always seem to be such nice people. They're nice and they're too nice. And it's as if the body has said, I cannot do it anymore, because they have neglected to say, I will not. You know, they haven't said, I'm not doing that. I'm not helping you move a piano up the stairs. I'm not, you know, I won't. And the body has said, I cannot. And so it gives them at times a way to not have to deal with things that they shouldn't be dealing with anyway. And oftentimes the thing that makes the difference is learning to say no, and knowing that you're still a nice, kind, helpful, loving, compassionate person, and you cannot do it all. So it comes back to, is this mine to do?
Right. And yeah. I always talk about this idea of knowing the value of your yes, because whenever you say yes to something, you're saying no to at least one thing, if not more things. And to know the value of your yes, and oftentimes I sort of do this math equation in my head on lots of things about, okay, if I say yes to this, and we all have 24/7, and I need some sleep, you know, what am I taking away from? What has to be minused from the calendar to make room for that yes? So knowing the value of my yes is important. And I have to say, a lot of times it does look like a math equation. I'll put it on a piece of paper and do a math equation, like, okay. Wow. And then I understand, is that what I'm supposed to be doing?
That's so wise.
Yeah, what do I give up instead?
Oh, I wish I had asked you that myself fairly recently. Last year, some friend said, would you like to do this such and such, you know, commitment? And I was like, well, that sounds like fun. And I committed to it. And it's not something that one could change. It's a commitment. And since then, something that I really, 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 really want to do has been scheduled on the exact same weekend. And I just find myself going, you know, and so I wish I had your strategy or put it into place. Like, it was kind of like, oh, that sounds like fun, rather than I'm burning, I want to do this so badly. So when the event came up that I really, really want to do, I feel regretful that I've made a commitment. I'm like, darn it.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Oh.
That happens a lot. I know. Even with mine, I have to say that would not be 100% foolproof, even with my idea knowing the value of your yes. My math here on these, knowing the value of your yes, is not as scientific as real math. Okay?
Right.
Just want you, everybody going, well, that's a great idea. Well, trust me on that it's not foolproof. My math, that kind of math, it has a little more freedom to sway around than real math. So anyway, oh my goodness. So let's talk a little bit about, I find oftentimes when people, and I can think of times throughout my diagnosis that I've fallen into that pit of what I call professional victim.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if we're always aware of it. I try to be very mindful of it and watch what's coming out of my, listen to what's coming out of my mouth to go, to make sure I'm not falling into that trap of professional victim, because it's, if you're having a flare or you're in pain or you're just, if maybe you're just having a grumpy day, maybe it has nothing to do with your condition, you're just having a grumpy day. it's like kind of easy to go, woe is me. Mm-hmm. And I know you've got some great strategies to help people get out of this woe is me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do. And the first one I would say is still some compassion for the part that is just feeling a little put upon. And you know, anyone dealing with pain, oh my, I take my hat off to you, because in the brief moments in my life when I have it, it's a game changer. And it does change what we focus on and how we're thinking about things. So we want to give ourselves a little bit of a break for having that feeling of, oof, our woe is me. So it can be a call to, where else can I be more compassionate to myself? And it's not a great place to live, in the woe is me, because it doesn't remind us of who we really are, that even when we're feeling not so great, that we want to remember ourselves. And so I had noticed several people coming in with dread, like, oh, what if this happens, or what if that happens? And I can go there, I know myself, because it's part of the side effects of having a great imagination, is we can see, you know, we can like make a great big story about the terrible things that can happen. And so dread also is connected to our immune system. It makes it, you know, if you even just for a second imagine feeling it in your body, it makes us smaller, it makes us hunched over, it makes us sort of brace ourselves for some kind of something that's going to happen. And so the opposite of that is to stand up tall, to take a deep breath, to square the shoulders back. And instead of waiting to be impacted upon, like the sky could fall on me, we move in such a way that we're an agent of action, that we're doing something. And once again, my way of doing that is questions. And there's a way to ask questions like, instead of, oh Lord, what could go wrong? Or all the ways that we can go into dread. You ask yourself, when this event, whatever it might be, for this to go just the way I would like, that would be like what? So for this presentation to go just the way I'd like, for this visit to my friend in the hospital to go just the way I'd like, it would be like what? And it takes our attention and it turns it in a new direction. And it has me go, really, it has us go to, like, what do I want to have happen instead of what am I afraid of? It's a whole different thing. And it can lead to an answer that could feel a little pie in the sky. Well, if I could have it just the way I'd want, it'd be like such. And between absolute fantasy and true, this is what I would like, there's a way that our brain loves to lock onto what we would like. And as soon as we ask ourselves that first question, and there's three in the series, that first question, for this to be just as I'd like, it would be like what? We get a whole different chemical mix, and we get new pictures.
I love that, be like what. We need to take a quick commercial break, Bev. So everyone, hold on that thought of what would it be like what? I said that wrong, Bev. Say the beautiful question again.
For this to be just as you'd like, it'll be like what?
It'll be like what? As you listen to these quick commercial breaks, we'll be back with Bev and we'll hear the other two questions and ponder on that. It'll be like what? We'll be back right after this quick commercial break.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour, but maybe you didn't know I'm also an author, mostly nonfiction. But recently I delved into the world of children's fiction with the Pinky Chenille series. If you haven't had a chance to check out Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, go over and check it out at pinkychenille.com. That's Pinky, P-I-N-K-Y, Chenille, C-H-E-N-I-L-L-E.com. Thanks. See you there.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Humanity Healing International is a small nonprofit with a big dream. Since 2007, HHI has been working tirelessly to bring help to communities with little or no hope. Our projects are not broad mandates, nor are they overnight solutions. but they bring the reassurance that no one is alone and that someone cares. To learn more, please visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor, and we're talking with Bev Martin today. And she is just an amazing woman, just full of all sorts of amazing tips and tricks on... Well, I'm not really sure. Beb, do you call yourself coach, a consultant?
I just know you're
a very gifted healer.
Thank you. I call myself a coach.
Oh, okay. Well, I just call her an amazing woman and a gifted healer and
someone
that I consult personally with all the time because her insights just always make me go, whoa. I love it because she gives us a different way of viewing something, a different perspective, stepping out of maybe our one world view into another perspective and seeing it something from an entirely different place. So, Bev, you started us with this thought about what would be like what?
Be like what? And you're quite right. Like grammatically, it's a very odd sentence. It's designed to go with how we think more than how we speak. And so it's even, you know, I often have to take a breath to think, how do you say that again? Because more naturally, and it's fine to use the more natural grammar, you could say, you know, for this to be just the way I'd like, what will that be like? It's just a little different the way it lands in our brain, because what a question like that evokes is a metaphor. For this to be just as you'd like, it will be like what? And it sort of takes our brain, and oftentimes a picture will arise. So if it's all right, I'd love to do this with you, Sharon. Like,
sure.
Is there a something that's coming up just for us to practice this that you could just put in the blank for this blank to be just as you'd like? What's the blank? Do you have a presentation, an event, a conversation? What would be the this?
For this to be, let me hear the question one more time.
So is there something that you're looking forward to or not looking forward to? Is there an event or conversation?
I'm actually looking forward to a presentation I'm giving in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful. I'm doing a great big training in a couple of weeks.
Ah, wonderful. So for this presentation to be just as you would like, it will be like what?
Immediately comes to one to mind that I did 2 years ago that I just, when I got off the stage, I just gave myself a high five.
Yes, awesome. You know, yay. And what was that like when it was a high five worthy type of presentation? What was it like?
It was... several moments of just where I wanted to give myself the old sort of yes moment.
Yeah.
One of those moments of flow where you know you've nailed something. You know, you've done it's that's just the moment of where you finally go, yes, that was the way that I'd envisioned it. So bringing that feeling, forward to this event coming up.
And so for this presentation to be just as you'd like, it will be like that, like high five, yes, and flow. And for it to be like that, this next presentation, I can ask it both ways. Grammatically, correct, it would be, how would you like to be? Or you'd like to be like what? To have this next presentation be like that. High five, nailed it. How would you like to be?
How would I like to be? Oh, my goodness. Lots of words, lots of nouns or verbs throw through my head all at once. I think some of them are like completely prepared in the moment, listening carefully. How would I like to be? Breathing comfortably. Happy. Oh my gosh, all these sorts of actions come through my head when I hear that question. That's a great question.
Yeah. Well, you see how it turns your head. I mean, you would have done this thinking anyway because you're an experienced presenter and you know how to prepare. And asking yourself, well, how do I want to be, is so different from, oh Lord, what could go wrong? You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I've done it both ways, and this way is better.
None of those words would have come out of my mouth if you'd asked me that other question.
That's right. That's right. You know, it's like our brain goes, oh, and then it's as if our whole physiology says, oh, sure, been there, done that. I know how to do prepared. I know how to be in the moment and listen carefully and breathe comfortably and feel happy. Like, of course. So you're now setting, you're setting your intention, and it's embodied. And so we've asked how you'd like to be. We're asking how you'd like to be so that it can be the way that you want. And then what you would do now is with each of these lovely words that you've come up with, you'd consider, so prepared, in the moment, listening carefully, breathing comfortably, and happy. Now you would ask yourself with each one of these, what support or resources do I need, say, to be prepared? What support or resources do I need to be in the moment? It might be like, I won't wear those shoes at pinch, you know, that keep calling my attention to my feet when I'm trying to think. You know, what support or resources do I need to listen carefully? I might need a good night's sleep the night before, or turn the music down in the room, whatever that might be. What support or resources do I need, you know, to breathe comfortably and to feel happy? So that's what you would do next, is you'd ask yourself, how do I want it to be? How would I like to be? And what support or resources do I need? And then you've got a plan.
I love those. Let's transform this from my presentation concept, though, to that last question brings up a thing that I hear oftentimes is people, when they have a long-term or ongoing condition, oftentimes either are afraid to ask or don't know how to ask. And I love this, that how you could walk this through even with a medical condition or anything. It works for anything, not just my presentation.
Right.
What are some other tips that you have for people when they're in that position of, you know, like, oh, I don't want to be a burden. I hear all these sorts of things like, oh, you know, this was going on for X number of years, and I've just asked everybody out. You know, everybody's just sort of overloaded. Or these are all stories that go through people's heads. They may or may not be true, but what are some tips do you have that people can get past that story of asking?
Well, it's a tricky one, because often it is a person who's very caring and careful. And my own experience of people who've had this kind of thing is that they give more than they take. And so they're great at the giving department, but they're not good at the getting. And they can also be really, and by they, I mean we, I include myself in this, we can get really disappointed that people for whom we've responded and said, oh, I see your need, it must be mine to do, I'm going to come over and rescue you, that others don't seem to have the same gene, you know, and that it seems that at times we need to spell it out. You know, how much clearer can I make it? I would really need some support here. So I think we do need to frame it as, let's allow people to love us more visibly, you know, allow people to love us back in the same way that we love them. Let's give them that opportunity, because how sad they'd be if they knew they missed it. I would do it that way. Of course, it also depends who, you know, it depends that a good relationship means you can ask more of that person. And so keeping our relationships good, part of what we want to do anyway. I would recommend even using these three questions with the other person. So say you're going on a road trip with a friend, and the friend may not be, the friend may be feeling quite well and peachy, and you yourself or whoever's asking the questions might not be. Or is a little concerned about, you know, I'm not sure if my energy is going to match my friend's. So I would ask my friend these questions. I'd say, so, we're going on this road trip. We're going from coast to coast, and we're going to share the driving, and we're going to stop and have some fun along the way. For this trip to be just the way you would like, it would be like what? And the friend might say, it would be like the Indy 500. It will be all systems go. Okay, a little worried now. And it would, and then you ask, you know, and for it to be like that, how would you like to be? And the person might say, I want to get up at 5 and I want to eat my Wheaties and I want to go, go, go. And then you might ask, and what support or resources might you need for that? And they might say, well, I will need lots of gas in the tank, metaphorically and physically, and I'm going to go, go, go. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. And for this trip to go just the way I would like, while you're having the Indy 500, what I would like would be a little bit more like a walk in the park. And for it to be like that, I would like to be rested. I would like to have time to smell the flowers, and I would like time to just enjoy the time. And the support or resources I would need for that is that at times I would need us to be having a walk in the park and not be in a race. So it can be a great way to say the support I would need is if I'm finding the race too much, I would need us to stop, and I'd need us to take a little walk, or I need you to understand that I can't go at that pace. And so asking each person the same questions and realizing that you might each have two different metaphors can actually give you a lot of information before you get in the car. You might decide otherwise, right? But it can help you to know, okay, what this person, it would be like a different thing for them or for me. And most often it's not as dramatic as an example as I've just used. You know, it'll be like, oh, for me, it will be like going to the circus. Oh, and for me, it'll be like reading a book. Oh, okay. And when it's like that, how would you like to be? I'd like to be like this. And what support do you need? So it's a great way to have a shared frame of language in order to ask another person for support. And when you have a metaphor like that, it's saying this is what it's like. Not only how I would like it to be, but it's also how I am when, you know, engaging in something. So what support or resources do you need? Asking someone for support and being specific about what it is that you need will help a lot, because sometimes a person who's experiencing a bit of support fatigue, like if you're concerned that they feel put upon or that you've worn out your welcome, one of the ways to help with that is to be as specific as you can be. So, for example, if you say, if someone were to make a request that's specific, if they were to say to you, Sharon, I'm doing this for it to be just the way I'd like. Say it's a training or a presentation, you're the presenter and I'm hiring you. I might say, for it to be just the way I'd like there to be lots of interaction, and I'd like this and this and this, and I would like to be calm and relaxed. And for support, I'm wondering, could you, if there's a lot of people clustering around me asking for my help, would you be willing to point to one of the assistants and ask them to come and help me? So it's a very simple thing that I'm asking, would you please do this? When you see this, could you do that? Is often easier for help than to say to someone, would you help me not get tired?
Oh, yes, it's much more specific. I love that you're setting very clear boundaries, and it's much easier for people to agree to when they know exactly what it is, because tired, wow, how you might know mentally you're tired, but you're still smiling and trying to give it, you know, 100% with your tank on empty.
So be as specific as you can be, so that if a person can say a clear yes, they know what it's a yes to. And if they need to say a clear no, they can say a clear no, because they know exactly what you're asking.
I love that. We'll be back right after this quick commercial break.
The best of holistic, spiritual, and conscious world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
What are all the things you witness online in a day? Cats playing piano, selfies on your feed, your friend's picture being turned into a nasty meme that's been shared 50 times, 51, 52. When someone's being bullied online, it's hard to know what to do. Now you can speak up with the witness emoji. It looks like an eye in a speech bubble, and it's in the symbol section near the clocks in your phone. You'll let the world know it isn't cool, and you'll let your friend know you care. Learn more at eyewitnessbullying.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor, and we're talking with Bev Martin today. And one thing that came to my mind as you were talking about this, and I was listening and going, oh my goodness, this is all about how the difference between understanding expectations that you have and not living in the world of assumptions, which I often find people do, is well, she should have known. I assumed he knew better or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my goodness, how would they have known? from the outside looking in, you're just going, oh, really? How would they have known? So I can understand how this whole process absolutely sets clear boundaries, sets some expectations of each party, and eliminates a lot of those crazy assumptions that we can get ourselves into.
Absolutely right. You know, those are those ones where it's like you say, well, they should have known, or it's obvious. Well, no, it isn't. Or it wasn't.
Right, absolutely. Because we all tend to like, well, I would have seen it. Yeah, but you with your own specific set of criteria and eyes, and you recognize, you know, when that eyebrow goes up, that's what that means or whatever.
You would have seen it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, people would see that, and other people would like, oh, I didn't even see that whole person over there when that was happening. So, oh my goodness. I can see how this can get us in so much trouble. You know, I want to go one other place, though. I know we're kind of, my audience is used to this, Bev, and I know you are too, because when we have tea, I tend to do this too. But I want to choose another favorite rabbit hole of mine. And I want to talk a little bit about some interesting work that I know you do. And that's, I probably have it around the wrong terminology, tell me, correct me. This idea of family constellations.
Mm-hmm.
I know you do it a little, I love them, and I've done them where they're big, almost theatrical presentations where you take people and, you know, you stand in for this and you stand in for that. I've heard you do it a little differently with, like, objects and things. And so it can just be two people in a room. It can just be you and someone else. And a friend told me about it. So I wanted to know. It was so transforming. I was curious about when someone has a health condition, how family constellations can show them maybe some areas to look at that they never even considered.
Oh, yeah. It's such brilliant work. I want to acknowledge Jane Peterson, who's a person here in Portland who does it. And there's people all around the world who really have it handled and do those big events where there's several people standing in for one another. And I got to learn from Jane how to do it with objects, because it's just me in my little office. And I can't call on 10 people to come say, hey, you stand here, your grandfather, and you stand there, your child, you know. And so we use objects. It could just be like beautiful river rocks or marbles or anything, because as soon as we can look at our family metaphorically, we do anyway, but we can use objects to say, oh, this is my mom, this is my dad, this is me. And as soon as we make a metaphor landscape, so to speak, even just using objects, it becomes what I call psychoactive. It takes on a life and a meaning. And the way I know that is, here's a little dirty trick I play, and I'm giving you the inside scoop. But in groups where I've had people use rocks or coins to represent their family, we'll go around the room and say, you know, tell us about your representation, and someone will say, well, this is my dad, and they're pointing to a coin, and this is my brother, and they're pointing to another coin, and they've arranged it in a very particular way because there's a pattern in a family, and it matches how we feel. Like we might say, I'm closer to this sister, so she's over here next to me, and this person has passed away, so they're over there. Like we represent our maps of our families in a very particular way, and it has meaning for us. And the dirty trick I play is when we're in a group and everyone is described and they're pointing at the coin as if it's now a family member and they've forgotten it's a coin, I say this, I say, and looking at your representation of your family right there, what happens when I give you the instruction to take one away? And the, right, we all go, oh,
I did. I stopped no breathing longer when you said that. That's so strange. It's right? Not even my family constellation right now, and
no,
I stopped breathing.
But it's a terrible feeling. We go like, oh, no, because we've forgotten that what the instruction is, like move a coin. But what we hear is, you know, do take a family member and change the dynamic. We're like, no, and then I quickly let them know. You know, I'm just showing you that that representation has life and form and energy to it. We're not just looking at coins or rocks. That is our family in that moment. It's a live metaphor, or as my friend Marion Way, who's a trainer of clean language, says, a singing and dancing metaphor. It's got life. And so when we know that we can represent something in a very lively way like that, it's got information in it. We can learn from how it's arranged. We can learn from what happens when we move the elements inside. We can see how people are in relation to one another. And not only can we sort of diagnose to see how are things in this relationship, we can predict in a way, we can move something and see, like, if this happened, would that make everyone breathe more easily or less? Oh, okay. So it's as if you get an opportunity to try out some strategies inside of the family in a lab and then wait until you know the right move to make, the one that has everyone in their right place and has everyone breathe more freely and feels healthier. Then you know your strategy will work inside of this system, because we live in systems where we're not an island.
That's so profound. And my friend was telling me that she had this amazing moment where she said it's just really radically changed her life. In that same moment where you said in moving things about in her system, well, she came upon this realization that she had been in what she called the may I position. It's a very questioning, weaker, lower position of some sort. I think she mentioned something about like the child's position. And there was a movement to the I am position, and all of a sudden everything shifted. And I was just amazed at how quickly it happened. So let's talk a little bit about the idea. When she was telling me, I could see some relationships in even our own world, talking to healthcare providers or coming from the may I position to the I am position.
Oh,
I could see so many other stories around that. So let's talk a little bit about what is the may I position and what is the I am position?
Well, I'm so glad you're reminding me of that session, because it was a powerful one, and those two positions are key. So may I is a child. A child says, you know, may I? Am I allowed to? Is this all right with you? And of course, when we're 5 or 9 or 11 or 12, that is our way that we interact with the world. We wonder, like, you know, may I? And yet, when we're in an adult place, especially if we've got a lot of responsibility, and if I remember that particular client correctly and others like it in this kind of pattern, they've got the double whammy of I'm in the may I asking for permission, and I have all the responsibility on me. So that's like, well, wait. You know, when you're really a child, you're in may I, and you have to ask permission, but you're not responsible for anything. It's kind of peachy. Or you're an empowered adult that is responsible for some things, but you have your power, and you're not an asker of permission. You give permission. So it's a bind to have the downside of each of those. And so to move, especially with doctors, because if you think of the word invalid, I hope nobody uses it, horrible word, invalid, it looks like, when it's written, it looks like invalid.
Yeah, right, true. True, yes.
You know, my feet are not valid. I don't count, like, the doctor's the expert and the genius here, and I'm just hoping he or she will say, yes, you may do this, or no, you may cannot do that. So if we put ourselves in that position, now, that's different from legitimately listening to an expert if we have hired to give us the information we want them to give us. That's different. Instead, it's like, oh, this person has the power and I do not. And when we step instead into I am, we remember our inner power. We remember that we're the boss of ourselves. We remember that no matter how super educated, how many degrees the doctor has, that he is in the service of ourselves and our health, that we're taking the information, we're employing it, that we're at choice. You know, those of you who are listening, just sort of feel the difference in your body between, may I? And take a breath, take your full height. It feels like you might feel it around your heart, around your chest, or even your solar plexus. There's like, I am. I am.
We'll be back right after this quick commercial break.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life, and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Hey, Dr. Phil here. You know, I help people solve difficult problems every day, but one problem has me stumped: childhood hunger. Nearly 16 million children in America struggle with it. Luckily, the Feeding America network of local food banks collects surplus food, giving hope to hungry children and their families. But they need your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor, and we're talking with Bev Martin today. When you were talking about the doctors, one thing came to mind that I've occasionally been guilty of, but I could think of numerous people in my life that consistently go to the doctor from that may I position, and the expectation is set up when both the doctor, you know, when they both leave the room, that will be followed, whatever that direction was, right, will be followed. And yet that person who may is the adult in that may I kind of thing does not follow any of that advice, and then nothing happens, or heaven forbid something gets worse, where from the I am position, I'm sorry, that's not going to work for me.
It's not going to work for me. I'm a choice, you know, or what else you got?
Exactly.
Or, yeah, I am.
So, taking right. charge of your health care with that phrase, I am, versus the may I. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. I'm so glad we talked about this, because it has so many ramifications as I'm thinking of it. And I've got more questions here. One of the things you brought up, and I made a note here, was this idea, look at our family metaphorically, and the idea of clean language. We just have a few minutes left, but I've taken some of your clean language trainings, which I absolutely adore, with Marion and you. And so tell me a little bit about clean language and how we can use it around our own healthcare.
Clean language and symbolic modeling is how I work with metaphor. I absolutely love it. And with health, it's very significant. In fact, there is a whole book on using clean language with health. It's called I'm the Patient. And it might have another term, but it talks about empowerment. It's like, I'm the patient, like, and I know what I'm doing. It's a great book, and how really it should be required reading for any compassionate care provider or doctor, because it does say how to use the wisdom in the patient to direct the protocol. And so clean language helps us work with metaphor, helps us find the wisdom tucked away in that little metaphor. The empowerment part, when you understand like how you are thinking and change it, if you like, the possibilities are endless.
Oh, I love clean language and the trainings I've done because, like you said, I do geek out on how language has meaning. all the words we choose have meaning. But I also have used it in so many ways, dealing in difficult situations, just some of the questions that clean language has. I find that I can come up with more solutions.
It's a great way to really connect with yourself, with your own way of thinking, with your creativity and your uniqueness. And I love it for that. And the questions that we use today comes from clean language. It's called the Clean Setup. And it was developed by Caitlin Walker, who does clean. And the way that she does it is working with what they call in England at-risk youth. She worked with young kids who were in gangs. These were tough kids. And she approached them cleanly with clean questions. And her book, From Curiosity to Conflict, I might have it here somewhere. It's about working in groups with conflict and how asking the questions with respect and clean of assumption helped each of these kids in this group to really avail of their own resources. And then they became quite a wonderful team. And the funny thing is, corporations began to approach Caitlin Walker and say, could you speak to our executives? And she said, oh, no. I work with, gangs. So I don't think this works with executives. And then she began to do it in corporations, and she discovered there's not that much difference between executives in with their thinking and gang kids in when they can get themselves hung up on their own thinking. So apparently, across the board, asking a question clean of assumption and helping someone access their finest thinking works in most or any context. And it's probably the respect and the curiosity that does that.
Well, what I love about them is, let's go back, that some of the questions, those three questions Bev started with, are formatted in a very clean way. And it's oftentimes when you've ever been asked a question by a doctor or something, it's like the one I just roll my eyes at is on a scale of 0 to 10, what's your pain? I'm like, what?
Right. And if you didn't have pain before they asked the question, you
exactly.
do now.
Exactly. Even if it's minimal, give it a 3. I don't want to be a 0.
Right. It sends us on a search for pain. Even if they just, it's such an annoying question, even if they just changed it, it still wouldn't be clean, but it would be more helpful if they asked, what's your level of comfort today on a scale of 1 to 10?
Right.
Because then you'd be looking for the thing you want to find, not the thing you don't want to find.
True. And another question that I just want to help people understand to reframe is when you're in a medical professional situation and they'll come up with this question of, can you lift your leg? Can you squeeze this ball? In my mind, whenever I'm asked that, it's like, you're setting me up to ask that I cannot. It's a very disempowering question whenever I hear it. I just want to talk to the medical professional and say, ask me it differently.
You could tell them that, but they would need to be like you and listen carefully. What a difference it could make. Absolutely. Well, they've done like with children in, say, law enforcement situations, young children who are being asked to give evidence. Their children particularly are very tuned into like, what does this big scary man in the uniform want me to say? And apparently in the UK, the clean language is quite well adopted within law enforcement so that a policeman can know that he can ask a child, so did anything, what happened? It's still not entirely clean because it implies that something happened. But, what happened? And then what happened? And what happened next? Stay curious and engaged and just be like open. And so the kid isn't going like, oh, I think he really wants me to say this or that. Because an unclean question would be, what did the bad man do to you?
Right.
So that if that didn't happen, now it's in there. And, a bright child with an engaging imagination and be like, oh, that's what we're doing now? You know, that's the story I'm spinning, as opposed to eliciting really cleanly whatever wants to come out without steering it.
Oh, my goodness, my goodness. We could go on and on, but we're just about out of time. I want everybody to find out more.
Drop me a little line, and I'd be glad to answer any questions you might have. And the web address is bevmartin.com.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much, Bev. And as you've probably been listening, you can drop her a note via her contact page on her website as well regarding any of the work she does. It's not just about clean. Drop her a note. I know she coaches in person if you want to do that, which I always love to do when I'm in Portland. Or she also coaches via the, what is it Zoom, Bev, or
Zoom.
Something?
Yeah, I Zoom. It's great.
Yeah, where you can see each other face-to-face via video and get just an amazing result as well. So everyone, go over to bevmartin.com, look her up and get more about Bev's work in general, because you can just see how some of these questions can open up whole new ways of thinking for you, whole new avenues of healing for you as well. Because every time I see Bev, I just walk away amazed, going, whoa, okay. And in no difference tonight. My mind's been blown again, Bev, my dear. So thank you so much for being on the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Oh, my goodness. Everyone, go make it a great weekend, whatever your adventures, and join me next Friday night for another amazing show. As always, just enjoy.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and/or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour, but maybe you didn't know I'm also an author, mostly nonfiction, but recently I delved into the world of children's fiction with the Pinky Chenille series. If you haven't had a chance to check out Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, go over and check it out at pinkychenille.com. That's Pinky, P-I-N-K-Y, Chenille, C-H-E-N-I-L-L-E.com. Thanks. See you there.